You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks in for Carlin tonight here on 98.7 ESPN. Fresh off my boat. Friend's birthday today. And went over to the Jersey City Marina, and me and a few friends rented a sailboat with a captain and spent the day on the water, which was just absolutely beautiful. And now I'm here with y'all for the next 3 hours, coming to you live from the living room of my apartment. So if you hear a dog or two or three or four or possibly five, well, there's one right there. And that would be Satchmo, who... who actually thinks he can talk and communicate with humans. And we've got Joel back in the studio in New York. Joel, how you doing tonight?
Hey, how's it going, Anita?
Today was great. I mean, you know, blessed. Was on a boat with some great friends celebrating somebody's birthday, and now I'm here. I'm on a boat. Yep. So sailing on a boat. Took Frankie with me. Was able to take my dog. How cute is that? You get to rent a sailboat with a captain, and they actually have one of those life preservers for dogs. Who knew? And of course, Jacob is also working the show from home. So it's a 3-person show, and we've got a number of great guests lined up for you tonight. Jane McManus is going to be joining us momentarily around 7:15. I do want to spend a good part of our first hour tonight talking about picking up where we left off yesterday in regard to the Washington Post story on Dan Snyder and what's going on with the Washington team. Jordan Renan, who covers the Giants, is going to join us in our first hour as well to give us an update in regard to what's going on with the NFL, still negotiations taking place between the NFL and NFLPA with the start of camp on time. And I've been saying that I do not anticipate camp to start on time, but it just seems like the NFL is hell-bent on training camp starting July 28th, which is shocking to me. I will use the word shocking if that does happen. So we'll get the latest from Jordan Renan and update what's going on with the Giants. As keep in mind, during this pandemic pause and players being away from their organizations, a few have gotten into trouble. Michael Grady, who covers the Nets, is going to join us in our second hour. We'll dive into some NBA talk as the season is really hopefully about to start. I'm hearing some negative, I'm actually hearing a lot of negativity surrounding a number of players that are not happy in regard to their situation, the bubble. It's not what they signed up for. It's not what they were expecting. So I'm curious if Michael Grady is hearing the same thing I am, and what we can expect once the season does begin. Also, don't forget, it's Friday. What does that mean? We're here to help you win some money. So our Week in Wager show kicks off at 9 o'clock. John Mascari will join me at 9 o'clock to talk about the Memorial. Hopefully we can win you some money. What golfers you might want to put some money on heading into the weekend that hopefully could be beneficial for you and to you. And Rob Masiello, a good friend of mine, is going to jump on board around 9:30. The Haskell Stakes horse racing at Monmouth is going to take place tomorrow. And again, so two dudes hopefully will be on point tonight in the 9 o'clock hour for our gambling show, and give us some insight. I'll share with you who I like specifically, obviously, in the golf tournament at the Memorial, and who I'm going to be putting some money on as we head into Saturday and Sunday. Tiger Woods, that's a big story as well. It's the first tournament that Tiger Woods has participated in since the, and as I like to call it, the pandemic pause, and sunk a putt, like nailed a putt just to make the cut at +3. And that's bizarre. It's just, I feel like the past few weeks, the cut's been like -3, not +3. But it just goes to show you how difficult this course is this week. in Ohio for the memorial. So that's kind of the layout of our show. I'm excited to have all our guests on. But as I said, I really want to spend the first at least the first 45 minutes of the show talking about the article in the Washington Post. I know we touched on it last night, and I want to pick up where we left off. 800-919-3776. I've been booked for a number of radio shows across the country. Why? Well, pertaining to the situation. No, I don't cover the Washington team. But more so, you know, it's the 15 women that the story is about. And the 15 women that have come forward, whether it's on the record or off the record, alleging sexual harassment within the workplace with Washington, is a story that it's not just Washington. It's not just the Washington team. You know, we had a very interesting, I'll call him an interesting caller. He was pretty annoying, to be quite frank. But here's the thing. His comments irritated a number of people last night. His name was Ed, called in pretty early. And said some things that really upset me. But listen, you know, I it's my job to be professional. You know, I can't get my panties in a bunch. I can't fly off the handle. I've got to stay level headed. But really upset a number of our. Wouldn't you say, Joel? Because you produced the show last night. Would you say Ed really, you know, ticked off a lot of our callers last night? I mean, our phone lines blew up.
That would be the nice way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And pretty much what Ed said was, hey, listen, you know, this is the field that you women have decided to be in. You just have to, and I'm paraphrasing here, okay? And pretty much what Ed was saying was, this is the field that you ladies decided to be in. This is part of the territory. You should know, like, this comes with the job. Sexual harassment. It's part of the job. And as irritating and as frustrating as that statement was from Ed, I hate to admit it, but he is somewhat right. If you read the Washington Post article, that type of behavior, that type of treatment against women happens more frequently than you think, especially in this field. And I'm not just saying sports talk radio or sports broadcasting, just sports in general. And to be perfectly frank, like, and this is why I booked Jane McManus for the show, because she's been in this realm. She's been in this world, you know, just as long as I have. So she knows what time it is, okay? And, you know, it's not that we sign up to pursue a career in this field and in the back of our minds going, well, you know, we just have to accept this. No, that's not our mindset. And it's not something that we want to accept. But to sit here and just assume that this type of behavior only happens with the Washington team and no other team in the NFL, or just to sit here and assume that this type of treatment to these 15 women is just an outlier or a microcosm is naive. This happens, I'm not going to use the word a lot, but this does happen, and it happens frequently. Whether it's professional teams, whether it's broadcasting, you know, sport is. I'll never. Growing up as a kid, you know, you're asked, "Hey, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And I would, with the most serious face, say, "I want to be a professional football player." And the response was always a smirk, a smile, a pat on my head. Oh, she's so cute. Now, you know what? I did end up playing women's professional football for 5 years. So, you know, I did achieve my dream and my goal, which opened the doors to what I'm doing right now. But when I said that when I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, I'm thinking I wanted to play with the boys. I wanted to play with the men. And that, now fast forward, wanting to be in this field, wanting to, whether it's a sports broadcaster, whether it's working for a professional sports organization, whether, whatever the case may be, the sports arena is predominantly a male, a man's world. So yes, do we as women understand and accept that, listen, we're going to have some hurdles. This isn't going to be easy. You know, we are wanting to play in a, in an arena that is predominantly testosterone driven. But just because this is the field that we decide to be in, or this is the career choice and this is the path that we've decided to pursue because we love sport just as much as you do, and you being men, doesn't necessarily mean we have to accept or subject ourselves to this type of behavior. And that's, you know, that's what's really upsetting, and that's what's really sad about the story, is because it happens more than you think, and more times than not, it's swept under the rug, it's not reported, and it is kind of taken as a, well, you know, it's, this is what I signed up for. This is the arena that I work in. This is just one of the things I have to accept because this is the career choice that I've chosen. And that's sad. So as irritated and as frustrated and as angry and as resentful and as disgusted as I was last night with Ed's phone call to start off our show, he was our first caller. And Joel, I think I took him in the first segment.
Yeah, you let him on early, and that really just set the world ablaze.
It really, I don't want to say it defined the show, but it really took the show to another level. And it's been on my mind all last night and all today. And to really have to have a come to Jesus, not a meeting with myself, but a realization. I know, Momo. Do you hear him? My dog's talking to me. I know, it stinks. Momo, it really stinks.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks in for Chris Carlin tonight. That's Liz Clark on Sarah Spain and Company, her show and company. Without further ado, Jane McManus joins us now on 98.7 ESPN. I know we have a number of callers who want to chime in. Hang tight, I promise. I will get to your calls. 800-919-3776. Jane, hi, good evening.
Hey, how are you, Anita?
I'm great. I just got off a boat. How about that? I go from a boat.
I saw the picture on your Instagram. That is one of the all-time best boat pictures in the history of human boating. So congratulations. That is incredible.
How cute is Frankie?
I love that song.
Of course, the response I get is, why does Frankie get to have all the fun? So this is what I tell people. And I'm going to have to whisper because a few of my dogs are staring at me right now. So when Frankie gets to do all the fun stuff, we have an agreement. We tell the rest of the dogs that he went to the vet.
So they actually feel like they're on the winning side of that.
Exactly.
That's the idea.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't know that Frankie was on a boat today. They just think that he went to the vet and they're like, boy, aren't we lucky? Anyway.
Anita, when you're the leader of a pack, you know, there's a lot of psychology involved in that. So I appreciate what you're trying to do to help out the rest of your dogs.
So I opened the show, you know, more discussion in regard to the Washington Post article that came out. And, you know, so last night, Jane, I had a caller, this guy Ed called and said, you know, you women, you know, if this is the career choice you chose, then you got to know that this is part of the territory. And of course, like, my first reaction was, you know, horns started growing out of my head. Callers were calling in. I mean, he blew the show right out of the water, like, in the first 5 minutes. But I thought about his call today, and I thought about his call last night. I thought about his call today, and I hate to admit it, Jane. I mean, listen, I've been covering the NFL since the late 90s. You know, I'm going to date myself. I don't want to date you. I don't want you to tell us how long you've been covering, but
I'm 49 years old, and I've been covering since 1998. I have no problem.
Okay. So we're both in the same ballpark, right? And
yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, Ed's right. Like, to sit and just assume that it's just the Washington team and it's just Dan Snyder, it's unfortunate. But, you know, we as women have decided this career choice because we love sports so much and we love what we do. But I can't even count on my fingers and toes, Jane, how many times I've had a situation very similar to these 15 women. Not even on my fingers and toes.
Right. And I'm right there with you. And unfortunately, that, you know, being able to parry advances or deflect people actively trying to humiliate you in a gender-based way is part of the job. And it has been ever since the first woman walked into a press box. And I understand that. And I certainly understood that when I got into the business. I hate the fact that it remains as true 25 years later as it was when I got into the business. I honestly did think that when more women got into the business, when more women were promoted to, and you know this very well, there are women who work at the VP level in teams. There are women in the front office who have jobs that are very important and pay a lot and that requires them to be leaders and have influence. There are women now working as coaches, as refs, as scouts in different teams. So, unfortunately, it really is that every woman who wants to be in sports because of an affinity for this and because they're talented at what they do also has to have a skill set where they have to be able to deal with harassment. And I just wish that, like in other parts of our society where women have made inroads, that there was more attention paid to creating work environments that were free of harassment for women in sports.
I hate that it is what it is, right? Like it is what it is. I don't know if this story is going to help change things.
I wouldn't be too pessimistic about that, because I think we are having a bit of a reckoning in different ways and in different parts of our society with these biases that are baked into the cake, and that we're trying to figure out whether or not they serve a purpose and whether or not they need to be there. And, you know, and I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen this too, I've seen a lot of really talented women leave this business and go into other lines of work because they didn't want to have to deal with, and they shouldn't have had to deal with, the garbage that comes along with it. And that's a shame. And I think, you know, that's not good for journalism. It's not good for the teams. If there are talented women who are working, you know, in the scouting department or the marketing department or the communications department or anything else, not being able to retain talent is not helping these industries out. And, you know, having a work environment like what is described in that piece by Liz Clark is it helping them win on the field? Is it leading them to be a successful franchise? I mean, I would say quite the opposite. It's not helping them win. It's not helping them be better. So I don't, you know, saying that we just have to expect it when it goes along with a larger culture that is actually dragging that franchise down. I guess you could make that argument. I don't think if you're a Washington fan, it necessarily makes you feel better about your team.
Do you feel that we really won't see a change in regard to this type of organizational culture across the board until there are more women in higher executive positions that are setting setting the tempo, like not the tempo, but setting, and it's not setting the stage, but, you know, having control of the organizational culture and what that means.
Well, I think it, I mean, I think a lot of it springs from ownership. I mean, you know, and I know teams that are actually pretty great to work for and have a good organizational structure and a good culture that helps people thrive. And so, you know, it's not across the board. I think the problem is with the NFL is that there is one culture that's in the front office where you have a lot of women working and they have a lot of, you know, there are definitely, you know, there are moves to get more women into important places. There's Sam Rappaport there, and she is in charge of creating jobs and making sure there's a pipeline of talented women who know the game to spots in the league and also on teams. But that atmosphere that is set in the NFL is not the same one that you find when you go to individual teams. The culture is set by the owners and the coaches and the people in leadership at those individual team levels. So you can have very different atmospheres depending on, you know, what team you're covering or what team you work for. And I think what actually has to happen is that there has to be, you know, Roger Goodell in the NFL front office has been loath to dictate terms to teams and to team owners, right? Roger Goodell works for the owners. And I think you have a number of owners who have had issues when it comes to gender and equity. For example, Jerry Jones has been sued for sexual harassment. You have Robert Kraft right now, who is currently facing charges for solicitation in Florida. So are those owners going to be sympathetic to young women who've been driven out of the business in Washington, or are they going to be sympathetic to the owner who's been accused of creating a hostile workforce environment? I mean, I think probably a lot of those owners are going to come down on the side of Snyder in this. So I don't necessarily think that it's going to force change in that way, which is what you would kind of expect in a normal corporate environment. So I guess it has to come from outside pressure. You've seen, for example, with the Washington team name, that the pressure to change that came from outside and came from sponsors. And if you have similarly sponsors who are like, this franchise is clearly on the rocks, I don't necessarily want, you know, the name FedEx or Nike or Pepsi to be affiliated with it, then maybe you'd find pressure that way.
And you know, I'm not, and Jay McManus joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. I just, one last thing before I let you go, and, you know, and please understand, I'm not comparing the two. I'm not comparing, you know, what women have had to deal with in regard to sexual harassment in the workplace to Black Lives Matter. Okay. I'm not. Let me just preface by saying that. But something really drastic and really horrific had to happen in order for the Black Lives Matter movement to really have a significant change and to really have significant power. And as damaging and as disappointing and as disgusting as this report is with the Washington Post, you know, I don't think it's as damaging enough or to be that powerful enough to really make a change, even though I understand that Dan Snyder has hired Beth Wilkinson, her LLC, an attorney who's going to come in and investigate. And to me, that's Dan trying to get ahead of the story and trying to do things right. Like, don't forget, he hired her before this story dropped yesterday. Like, to me, that's him just trying to get ahead of the story. So
He could have hired her in 2018 when the story broke about exploitation of cheerleaders that took place in that same team when they went on a trip to Costa Rica. And he didn't. Right. So if he really cared about it, I think he probably, that was a great opportunity to do that as well. And the fact that he didn't, I think he's shown that he is very stubborn and entrenched on a lot of these and fairly aggressive when it comes to this stuff. And I think that this is just, you know, he's been forced off that stance by outside factors, and this is just part of that. But I don't think these things happen in a vacuum, though, Anita. And I think the Black Lives Matter movement is so incredibly important, and part of the beauty of that, even though it stems from a horrific act and from decades of horrific acts, part of the beauty of it is that I think it's allowed us to see bias. And it's shown us bias, particularly when it comes to this one issue of policing and black and brown people. But I think there's no unseeing that there are other facets of society where there's also bias. Like, for example, when you have Native people coming forward and saying, will you please listen to us? This name that you've named the team does not respect us. We're telling you it doesn't respect us. And then it's impossible to unsee that there is a dynamic there that is not honoring Native people. And I think the same thing happens, you know, when you have Me Too or when you have these different things. It's all of a piece. It's all part of the same thing that is allowing us to see through other people's eyes what life is like for them. And listening to these women is a way of saying, the power dynamics that they're having to deal with in this team are completely out of, they're not anything that should be part of a workplace. And I think, you know, so I don't think that these two things happen, that they're, you know, it all plays out in the same sort of way. It's part of the same sort of thing.
Jane, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's great to hear your voice, and I appreciate your time, my friend. You have a great weekend.
Yours too. You know, you should think of taking the other dogs on a boat sometime, Anita. That's all I'm going to say.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Jordan, how you doing, man?
Good. How you doing, Anita? How's everything?
All right, just dancing around my apartment. That's all.
Oh, yeah? Well, there's not much else to do, right?
No.
Diet, golf, and there you go. Talk some sports. Let's go. We're almost at football time, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Not sure, but I think.
Before we start talking bigger picture, let's talk smaller picture in regard to the Giants. What's up with their kicker, dude? is him and Baker, are they off the team?
Say that again?
Who are they all, like, you know, we've now had a few Giants players who've gotten in trouble so far, you know, during this pandemic pause. You know, should we expect either of them back on this team, back on the roster?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. But I think they're two separate instances. I think there's a better chance right now that we're going to see Aldrick Rosas because, right, think about it. They don't really have another kicker on the roster. He's still on the roster. So that sort of, to me, indicates that as of now that they plan for him to still be with the team. Now, not saying he's not on thin ice because there's this whole situation and the fact that I think there was none of the charges included alcohol, which the original police report had indicated they believed it was a factor. But with the charges, that it has nothing, there's nothing that indicates that alcohol is a factor. So I think there's a much better chance that he's on the team. I think the idea of seeing DeAndre Baker this year, it's probably far-fetched, especially right now. And probably ever again as a Giant, to be honest.
What is the latest with that, by the way? I know there was
waiting. They're waiting to see if the state files charges. I mean, there's, you know, all this new evidence, apparently, that's been submitted over the, you know, since the original date. Usually, and this is why Aldrick Rosas, the charges were filed exactly on the 30-day mark, right? That's usually the mark where they like to, you know, they usually like to get something done. But in the Baker case, we're now in, like, I don't know, 60 days or something like that. We're way over the 30-day mark. So the fact that it has lingered this long makes you think that, look, there's something there that they're trying to see if they could put together a case, and which obviously would not bode well for him in his future, not only with the Giants but in the NFL.
Jordan Manon joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. So Jordan, and I think it's important we let people know, like, out of all the 32 teams in the NFL, the Giants have one of the most conservative medical staffs in the NFL. So if there's a team I truly believe is going to cross its T's, dot its I's, do it right, it's the Giants and their medical staff better and more than anyone else. Let me preface by saying that. But, you know, I text with David Cantor frequently just to, you know, because he sits in on those Zoom meetings, and he sends me his notes from the meeting. And I mean, there's so many unanswered questions. How do you expect the you know, camp to start on the 28th, Jordan?
Yeah, the reality is I would be surprised if camp does start on the 28th at this point. I really would. And when you talk to people in and around the team, they think the same thing as well. You know, the rookies were supposed to be coming and reporting on Sunday. That's not happening, right? The coaches are here this week. They came in this week. I believe they got their COVID test today. That was the original plan. That was the plan, at least. And that was still on schedule as of this morning. And so they're here. They're here with the anticipation, right, that they were going to have the rookies here starting Sunday. That's not happening. They still don't have an agreement with the league and the players on the rules. And there's some big factors that need to be addressed. Number one is how often they test. Is it daily? Is it every other day? And until they figure these things out, and the players are, you know, they're going to, and then there's the money part of it, right? Of, okay, they're going to lose revenue this year from what was estimated. Now, do they take it on the chin in year one? Do they spread it out over several years, which the players would like to do? These are the things that they're still basically, you know, bargaining the league and the players. So until that happens, we're not going to see training camp. And even when they do, I've talked to people and they made this very clear to me. They're not. It's not going to be like normal training camp. You get back and they, you know, they come out, they do a conditioning test, and the next day they get on the field. Remember, they haven't been there all spring, right? So there's going to be a significant ramp-up period once they do get back. Right? So you're talking about, you know, probably several weeks of getting guys in shape, and I know the Giants coaching staff is very concerned about this, of having, you know, preventing injuries because, look, these guys haven't been on a football field yet this year, Anita, not this year.
No, I know that's it's a huge concern. This is why, you know, when I do my videos for Daily Wager and we're talking about futures bets, you know, what teams are going to do well, what teams are going to make it to the postseason. You know,
I think
I'm looking.
I agree with you totally on the teams that have continuity.
Yeah,
humongous advantage this year. Humongous.
Absolutely, more so than you know, rosters and depth and I'm looking at teams that have little to no change.
Absolutely, for sure.
So you're with me. I don't. Here's another thing, like, so you know, New York and New Jersey we've been doing quite well, right? Since
we're on the positive side. It's funny. My daughter asked me, she's like, Are we in that map that they showed? Are we one of the red states? And I'm like, no. She's like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, New Jersey, New York. You know, we're one of the good states now.
Yeah, we're holding
to us
steady.
Being one of the red states, the bad, you know, the hot spot states.
So we're holding steady, but you know, obviously Miami, you know, Arizona, Texas, you know, they're.
Yeah.
You know, they have all-time highs every day. There's like a new high in regard to, unfortunately, reported COVID cases and deaths. So, you know, how are the Dolphins, how are the Miami Dolphins going to go into camp? There's no way. And you can't have the Jets and the Giants and the Bills start camp and not allow any of the teams in Florida or Arizona or Texas to start camp.
No, that's a non-negotiable. I mean, that you know, they talked about this from the start, and competitive balance has been a big factor, right? The teams, even in the spring, the teams with the states that probably could have had players in, they weren't allowed to because states like New York and New Jersey couldn't have players in. So it's going to be vice versa when it comes down to it here in the season. And so there's going to be a lot of factors. And the players, that's what they're saying. They're saying, we have to make sure that we are working in a safe environment as possible. We can't just because they want to have football, we can't just say, okay, we're going to go ahead and go in. Even if I'm just throwing this state out there because, you know, as a random, because we hear that, you know, things aren't going so well. But like Arizona and California, so the Cardinals and the California team, they can't just go in because the league is intent on playing football. They have to go in because they think that they can be successful with the guidelines and regulations that they have, because the problem is here, they're not even, I don't think, going to mandate these teams stay in hotels, right? So these guys are going home. So they're going to interact with people in everyday society. So if a state like Arizona is not doing well, and all of a sudden, you know, they're going to training camp and you know, the player goes home and he brings it back, and next thing you know, six, seven, eight, ten guys from the same team get it. Like, that's not a safe work environment for anybody. So they really have to be careful, and I think the players are very cognizant of that right now.
Jordan, thanks for joining us this evening. I do appreciate your time. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, I will, Anita. Speak to you soon.
You got it. So Jordan feels the same way I do. I understand that the NFL is determined. They are like dead set. They are hell bent on the NFL starting training camp on the 28th. Coming up in our second hour, we have Michael Grady, who's going to be joining us. We'll touch base with him in regard to the Nets and what's going on with the NBA bubble. But also, like I said, David Cantor, NFL agent, sent me his notes today on a meeting that took place yesterday and this morning between the NFL and NFLPA, and I will share those notes with you and dive into more specifics in so many reasons why, and so many questions, I should say, that still unanswered for the players. Alex and Salim, I see you guys. We'll get to your calls this next hour as well, I promise.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, Michael Grady is joining us. He covers the Nets. Michael, welcome in. How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Good to be on with you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. So we just heard from Michael Spears and him talking about how, you know, the bubble is probably the safest place in the world. Very interesting, because a few of the folks that I've spoken to have said that there are a number of players that are in the bubble, and not that they're complaining about the safety of it all, but just the day-to-day life and activity they're not happy with, and it's not what they signed up for, and it's not what they expected, and it's not what they thought it would be. And I'm hearing that a number of guys want out. I'm curious, are you hearing the same thing? Like, what's the feedback you're getting from a number of the guys that are in the NBA bubble?
You know, I think it would vary, especially depending on what team you are, your playoff positioning. Are you a real threat to a conference title and a trip to the NBA Finals? I have to imagine that while there may be a few disgruntled guys in the Lakers, they're all locked in because it's an opportunity to win a championship. Same thing with the Clippers, the Bucks, for example, and other top-tier teams. But if you're a team that you're there for no other reason than to finish out the regular season, then I would have to believe, especially if you have guys, let's say for the Wizards, for example, I can't speak specifically to guys' feelings on that team, but just as an example, with Bradley Beal not there, there's 6.5 or so games behind the Nets, really not likely to make the playoffs at all. What are you really putting yourself through other than collecting these game checks? And so from that standpoint, with all the concern about COVID, I could understand. I haven't heard it directly, but I could understand if guys are feeling like maybe I shouldn't be here. Maybe I should be with loved ones. And so I could understand that mindset if you guys have that thought.
You know, I kind of, and not to sit here and compare apples and oranges, and I'm sure people will look at it that way, but, like, you know, you've got the NFL and the NFLPA that are negotiating and arguing about having just one preseason game. To me, I kind of look at that the same way as I look at, you know, the NBA having any more regular season games. Like, instead of the 22 teams, why didn't you just make it the 16? Bring them in, let them come in with their families, whatever, it's 3, 4, 5 family members, as opposed to the 22 teams in games that, you know, that in my opinion aren't really necessary. Very similar to, I think, the situation right now with the NFL, where I think preseason games are unnecessary.
Yeah.
Agree or disagree?
Yeah, you know, and there's no real perfect way to do it. And we've been, you know, arguing about preseason games for quite some time. If you're a guy who's a lock to make the roster, you really don't care about the preseason game, maybe just the third one. If you're a guy who's a fringe player who, if you're not going to make an NFL team, you're going to be bagging groceries or doing something else and trying to stay in shape for the next offseason, well, you want 6 preseason games if you can make it happen. The truth and reality with the coaches is that they do a lot of evaluating over the course of practice, and some of those decisions are made in those type of situations. With the NBA, again, there being no real perfect scenario, if the 8 games before the playoffs will provide an opportunity for guys to knock off 3-4 months worth of rust. And I think it could get real ugly out there on the basketball court for those games leading up to the playoffs. And so 8 games from that standpoint, yes, you can figure out seeding to try to make it as fair as possible if you're Adam Silver. You're knocking off that rust. And then hopefully guys are finding a little bit of a rhythm by the time they get into the postseason. That said, it may make sense from that standpoint. But if you're one of those several playoff teams in the Western Conference who really don't have a shot of getting in, or the Wizards, for example, it's just, or even for the Lakers to a certain extent, you know, one of these teams could lock things up, and then what's the point of continuing playing? They're going to rest everybody these last handful of games. Those are some things where it's somewhat imperfect.
Michael Grady joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. With the numerous reports that we're hearing with players that either have had to leave the bubble or have contracted COVID-19 or haven't even made it to the bubble yet, or just recently made it to the bubble because they did test positive and they had to quarantine, what team do you think has been affected the most by any COVID-19 storyline and their roster that you feel is going to have some type of effect in the postseason?
Well, the Brooklyn Nets for sure. I say more so than any other team because of the number of guys on that roster that's been hit. And so they had the most number of players who contracted it when the league shut down back in March. And then once we got back rolling again, a number of guys came down with it. DeAndre Jordan, Spencer Dinwiddie tested positive twice and actually had symptoms. They signed some replacement players. Michael Beasley was among them. Then he gets COVID and he has to go home and he's not going to join the team. And so they have a number of new players on their roster. Jamal Crawford getting an opportunity there. Tyler Johnson has been added to the mix. Lance Thomas has been added to the mix, a former Knick who was practicing with the Nets back in the preseason. A number of G League guys have been added to the roster. And so it's a completely different looking team than the team that we saw during the regular season. And that team was decimated by injuries because, of course, no Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving only was able to play 20 games. And so the Nets at full strength, and it will even exclude Kyrie and KD, that was still a team that, if they were at full strength minus those two superstars, probably would lock up that 7 seed and would give Toronto all they could handle if Toronto ended up with that number 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. I really believe that. But with the roster right now, you're not quite sure what you're going to get because it depends on how quickly these guys with 8-9 replacement players, how quickly can they mesh and how much of a threat can they be. So they've been hit really the hardest. There are a number of teams that have been affected too, but just in sheer number of guys who contracted COVID. And Wilson Chandler didn't even want to take the risk and decided to stay home. The Nets were hit really hard.
So Michael, with that being said, you know, I hate to use the word tank. I don't like using it, but like, same. You know, realistically, you know, what should be the mindset, you know, or the game plan for the Nets? You know, should they play more youth players so that, you know, they can still be relevant in the draft?
That's, you know, I don't like the tank word either. I if guys are going to play, I would have them go out there and compete. Because in a guy in, if you bench Jared Allen, I want to see more from Jared. I want to see him continue to blossom. I want to see what kind of a menace he can be in these final 8 regular season games on through the postseason, and then build on that heading into next season. I want to see Caris LeVert continue to move in a positive direction. Are you going to play these guys 35, 38, you know, minutes a night in Orlando? Okay, absolutely not. But I want to see as much of these guys as I possibly can so that they can build on it headed into what will be a very short off season and into the next season. And so from that standpoint, tank is completely out of my vocabulary. It's completely out of their vocabulary. They're going to go out there and they're going to compete because we can't forget Jacques Vaughn wants to be the head coach of this team moving forward. And if he's playing all young dudes and they go 1-7 in those 8 games and get swept in the first round, how does that affect his candidacy as securing his spot as the head coach? So I expect the Nets to go out there and compete, play their tail off, and we'll see what happens. Again, it's going to be very difficult given the number of guys that aren't there. But that would be my mindset, to go out there, compete, play as hard as possible. Because the last thing I'll say on it, every guy out there in Orlando with the Nets, they want an opportunity to play with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving next season. They want to be a part of something special. And so if you go out there, play your heart out, and you show Sean Marks a little bit of something, there may be a spot on you on the roster heading into next season. So there, even though the odds are against them being decimated by not only injuries but the effects of COVID, there's still a lot to play for that team.
Michael, last one for you. You mentioned head coach. There's a report today that I came across. Kevin Durant wants the Nets to hire former Warriors head coach Mark Jackson. Is there any truth to that? What are you hearing about that?
I haven't had that confirmed. I do know that Kevin Durant has had conversations with Sean Marks, and both Kevin and Kyrie will be involved in the conversation about who the next head coach is. He may feel a certain type of way about Mark Jackson. I don't have that confirmed, but I do know he has a great deal of respect for Jacques Vaughn, and those guys stay in constant communication, even given the distance right now with Durant not being in Orlando. And so they talk about basketball, they talk about life. Jacques is trying to strengthen that relationship. And so I don't think it's a done deal, even if Kevin Durant is somewhat partial toward another candidate. I don't think it means that candidate is absolutely going to get the job. There's still a lot that has to happen. I think Jacques is in the driver's seat to get that particular job. And if Jacques does get that particular job, even though there'll be rumblings that, oh, is Kevin really on board with this? Is he really not going to like this? Whatever decision that they make, Kevin will be at peace with.
Michael, I lied really quick. I know we're talking about the Nets, but yeah. but it obviously you've got your finger on the pulse, not just of the Nets, but of the NBA in general. Anything you're hearing in regard to the Knicks and who their new head coach is the front runner right now, right?
You went in and out there at the end. Did you say
Thibodeau yes. is the front runner right now, right?
Yes, yes. And you know what? I some may disagree with it. I think he should be. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of his and the way that he coaches, his old school approach, the fact that guys compete really hard for him. I know people talk about him running guys into the ground, but I think on an NBA team you need dogs. You really need dogs on the roster. And if you have guys complaining that we're practicing too hard, well, that's the dude that I don't want on my roster. So when a Jimmy Butler, who gets a lot of criticism for being a hard ass, if you will, when he gets that type of criticism and he loves a guy like Coach Tibbs and the way that he pushes players and pushes him to compete and practice game in and game out, well, I want more dudes like Jimmy Butler as opposed to guys who are like, I'm tired. Like, Coach, can we get a day off for real? So I like Tibbs for that reason. And that reason alone, I think he's a great, you know, basketball mind. He just is a old school type competitor who likes to get after it. And he's going to bring players and want to have players on his roster who are going to want to get after it, too. So if he's the front runner, I think that's good news for the Knicks fan base.
Michael, thank you again. I really do appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. And have a great weekend.
No, you too. You too. Anytime.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.